877-326-5483.
Ah, yes, the Todd Feinberg Show, our Middle East Hour. We do this every week. It's that 1 hour the talk radio in this country devotes to actually learning more about what goes on in that part of the world that we need to know more about and we know so precious little about. A little public service here from the Todd Feinberg Show. Grant Smith joins us now. He's the director of research at a place called the Institute for Research Middle Eastern Policy, located in Washington, D.C. You can go to their website. I think it's irmep.org, but we'll double-check that. Grant, welcome back.
Hey, Todd. It's great to be back. Thanks
It's been a year and a half.
Yeah, thanks for finally inviting me back, and I emphasize the finally there.
Well, I was waiting for you to say you wanted to come back on.
Okay, well, I think it's a problem. We just haven't seen each other, and
you've got
to get down here to D.C. a little bit more often.
So, actually, I'm going to be there next month. Maybe we'll get together.
Sounds good.
Last time you were here, you talked about our trade with the Middle East, and I think it's a fascinating area to cover because we always are told that dollars are what break down the barriers between countries, and when you're doing business together, you find out a way to work out all the differences.
Right, and I think it dovetails well with the president's message this week about spreading democracy. If you're buying into that as one of the main objectives of U.S. policy in the region, economic development is certainly one of the pillars. If you talk about spreading tolerance, people having more trust and rule of law, more civic engagement, confidence and participation, all of these things happen in business. But I guess kind of like last time, if we're going to jump into this and drill down, I don't have any good news for you this year.
No? The numbers of
This region, it produces about $124 billion worth of goods demand alone, and probably another $60 or $70 billion in demand for services like consulting and education and software and services like that. But the problem we're having, Todd, is we're losing our share. We're continuing to lose our share of those import dollars and all of the good things that happen along with that.
So you're saying that the money from them to us in order to buy our product, or the other direction?
Exactly. Their dollars coming out to us, which is a way of reaching out to us. It brings our people into the region. It creates demand for long-term partnerships. We're having a problem holding on to that demand, and what we've seen over the past few years is about a 7% annual decline in demand for U.S. Products and services because...
From the Middle East.
From the Middle East. And I'm talking particularly about the Arab market in this case. Some of the bigger countries in the region, United Arab Emirates, Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, all of these together as a single market, it's been rough sledding for us. And I think, some of the things that need to be talked about more in the U.S. Are what are we doing here on the supply side that's affecting that demand, and what can we do to ramp up this exchange?
I just want to be clear on what the numbers are. You said we're losing about 7%
right.
a year of the business of our exports to the Arab world.
Exactly.
But how long has that trend been going on? Is that just since the invasion of Iraq, or is it a longer-standing problem?
No, it's actually started out strongly in the aftermath of 9/11. In this type of market, we've typically enjoyed about 20%. So every dollar they've spent, we've typically gotten, or every $5, we've gotten a dollar out of it. But this has been happening steadily since 9/11, and it's a combination of a couple of factors. On the supply side, we've made it harder to do business, particularly people coming to the U.S. doing due diligence.
Sure, just the travel problem.
Exactly.
So a lot of the Arabs are saying, you know what, we'll just skip the U.S. It's too much work to get through customs.
Exactly. Can't get a visa, or I'm afraid of being there, which is, every bit as daunting. But on the demand side, we've also got a lot more competition, particularly with Europe and China, as they attempt to displace U.S. market share, and they've got a lot less baggage going into the markets. And if we look in terms of trade representative offices, U.S. states, a lot of them actually have had commercial representative offices to boost their exports, which they've shut down. We've seen in the case of some Nordic countries, they've been opening up offices. So, you know, we've really got to look at what is the U.S. doing to make it harder to sell into that market, and what's happening within the markets themselves in terms of anti-U.S. sentiment, particularly on the consumer side, which is displacing us.
What types of products might be affected by that latter trend, by the populations of certain countries saying, you know what, I'm not going to buy the American item, I want to buy one from someplace else?
Yeah, we see that in consumer products, the disposables, the things like Coca-Cola. We see it in fast food where, you know, the kids are beginning to tell their parents, hey, I don't want to go to McDonald's because that's a U.S. company. You know, in terms of...
I guess that would be the most profound proof I've ever heard that we're actually being viewed in a bad light. Because,
yes.
It's traditionally been, no matter what's happening politically, that Coke and McDonald's continue to grow.
Yeah, well, that's traditionally been the case. But now, you know, if you look at a lot of the Zogby numbers coming out of the region, the sentiment on the part of consumers has become so negative, and the declines, you know, if he did a poll in 2002 and 2004, and you're talking about 50% changing their opinion from positive to negative. That does have a direct impact, particularly on the brands that are considered, you know, Americana. So that's definitely an issue. And you see it with the, you know, products like Mecca-Cola and Keebler Cola and some of these others, Zam Cola, which are all replacements, and they're attacking Coca-Cola's market share, Pepsi's market share, because they say, look, we're regional products, and we don't carry all the baggage of U.S. policy.
But look, you know, we're at war over there. Maybe this is just unavoidable during this period of time.
Well, it could be. I think the problem, though, is economic development. If we look at the big picture, if this is one of the pillars of a move toward democratization and all of the good things that have to happen before you can really think of democratization, I think it's an ominous sign that this is happening to the U.S. At this particular time, because it means, you know, maybe the strategy that we pursued militarily is actually going to take a much longer time to get a lot of these other factors in place. It could be that there won't be any long-term sentiment. I haven't seen any studies that have come out saying how quickly this will dissipate.
Sure, but it could be that we're not even the necessary exporters. You know, if the idea is that freedom will spread simply because the people who are in closed societies are going to see an opening up, mm-hmm. as their societies have to open up to get goods, to be able to get jobs, they have to have more open economies. As this movement happens, it may not be relevant whether it's with the U.S. or with Scandinavian countries, as you indicate.
Well, that's one way to look at it. But the other way to look at it is, in terms of brands and marketing savvy, the U.S., if you look at Interbrand and other measurement agencies, you know, we have almost all of the top brands, from financial services to fast food to consumer products. If we're not able to participate in the development of this region, what are we going to do? Are we going to watch it turn away to China? And what are some of the values of their products?
Oh, I see. So you're worried not just about the influence that trade with us would have on the short term,
sure,
but in terms of building relationship and helping those countries move, but the long-term effect.
Exactly.
Of having that not going on.
Exactly. So, you know, just to grind down into some of the big deals that actually happened last year, if we look at kind of a scorecard, our biggest accomplishments, and I'm talking about the U.S. Trade Representative and negotiating with these markets, were the creation of qualified industrial zones, which are really interesting because these are kind of, if you want to call them, sandboxes, where we tell players like Egypt and Israel, here, if you can begin developing exports within this tariff-free zone in a joint way, you can export to the U.S. market and have some trade preferences. So that's one thing, and I mentioned it, I call it a sandbox because that's what I've heard some people in the region call it, disparagingly, because this is, instead of trying to develop a lot of economic activity. It's more of this sort of lever to get things going in the region the way.
Well, it sounds like a nice lever and a good tool to be able to get people to move in the direction we want them to move and to get the business going.
It's good, but it doesn't have the resounding impact that, for example, pulling some of these big players into the WTO would have. For example, we've got Saudi Arabia, which has been trying to get into the WTO now for over 10 years. They feel almost as though the U.S. strategy in the region is to block that ascension. We've got the U.S. doing bilateral deals with Oman and other smaller players instead of going for the big final negotiations to get Saudi Arabia to ascend.
So why would that be?
Well, the strategy, and this is a strategy that the office and the GAO...
Hang on a sec before you answer that question. I just want to reintroduce you. And
okay.
I gave the website before. I just wanted to make sure I gave it out correctly. Is it IRMEP.org?
Right, IRMEP.org. And if you can't find it that way, just Google American Middle East Policy, and we're the number one and two links there.
All right, and it's Grant Smith we're talking to, the Director of Research at the Institute for Research Middle Eastern Policy, and talking about trade issues and the effect that they have politically. And Grant, you started off by talking about the president's speech this week and his desire to see freedom spread, and you've made a link which is definitely a valid one. That is that what makes it happen is when people are doing trade with each other, and when the bread on your table depends on being friendly with some other country, well, all of a sudden, it gets a lot more fun to be friendly with that other country.
Yeah, exactly. Economic development is a pillar. We call it a precursor, and we spend a lot more of our time looking at the increase in trade and development because it's a precursor. You can't have democracy, again, without all of the things that economic development, rule of law, and civic engagement bring.
But there's another force
you have to have in place.
There's another force at play here as well, dealing with the Arab world and the United States, and that is that they're trying to deal with the fact that they need new sources of money coming in, they need international trade, they need new financial institutional structures in their country, new laws and legal systems, and all different things in different parts of the Middle East that are necessary in order to do this kind of trade. So it's not just a matter of doing trade, but it's also a matter of infrastructure change, and that infrastructure change is linked to the fact that they have huge needs in terms of getting jobs into their countries,
yeah, having,
and getting on, young people employed and
exactly,
and such things.
Exactly.
So we've got to pause briefly. I'll give you a chance to comment on all that when we get back. Grant Smith with us on the Todd Feinberg Show. Visit my website, toddtalk.com, TODDTALK.com. It's the Todd Feinberg Show, Saturday edition, our Middle East Hour. We're learning about trade with the region. Grant Smith with us from IRMEP.org, if you want to check out the website. And we've been talking about the nature of the trade relationship between the United States and the Middle East and how it has changed post-September 11th. And, of course, the burden is, as I laid out before, that these are countries that need money coming in, need jobs coming in, need the trade of goods, and also need to make changes in their infrastructure to make that possible.
Yeah, that's an important thing. We have seen a lot of that happening, Todd, with market liberalization and a lot of these countries trying to attract more foreign direct investment, that is, investment that doesn't leave at the first sign of trouble in the form of plants and equipment. And I think what we're really talking about here is this whole hierarchy of needs. If we had 60% unemployment among youth in the U.S., we'd probably have a pretty politically unstable situation here. And anytime we talk about development that creates jobs, which is how we left off before the break, that's exactly it. That's the name of the game in a lot of these countries. This has been given a bad name. People have said, well, you don't trust the democratization process. Well, this is a precursor. You've got to have employment. You've got to have economic development to really think about building robust democracies in the region.
And to what extent can democracy be forced into a structure where, and this may not be the question to ask you, but it just pops into my head, when you have democracy pushing change?
I really, you know, in all of the studies of international relations and different histories that I've read, I have not seen any instance where you forcefully insert something called democracy into a society that has none of the preconditions. And I've heard a lot of interesting analysts talking about this particular region as being so far from that stage, if you want to think of it as a timeline, that we really should be focusing as a nation not on democratization tomorrow. We should be focusing on economic development. We should be focusing on how people within a given country can begin speaking between themselves and building those civic engagement networks that are so important, and what we just talked about, trust in legal rules. If I invest, if I have a piece of property, can I count on it being mine legally by title tomorrow, or is it going to be gone? So all of these things are precursors. You don't have democracy without a lot of these things in place.
Yeah, and why the development, I think, has to go hand in hand. I don't think you can focus on one or the other, but democracy and economic development have to be happening at the same time, because you need those democratic mechanisms in place, those structures. You need the transparency and open legal systems and
exactly.
All that. So you can understand what you just said. You know, it's amazing when you, and I've traveled to some of these countries, when you get to a country where you own something, but somebody who happens to, say, be part of a royal family decides they want it, and then suddenly it's not yours anymore.
Well, that can happen in any country. You know, eminent domain here in the U.S. has deprived many people of their businesses and homes.
Sure, but that at least comes with some rules.
There's got to be rules, exactly.
About random, you know, your next-door neighbor happens to be the third cousin of the grandniece of the monarch, so you know, what they want they get, and you can't challenge them in the legal system.
Well, but that situation, unfortunately, if we look at a lot of democracies, Venezuela, Mexico, Colombia, Transparency International and other organizations that say they're democracies and they're fairly transparent, but that sort of problem where they have weak rule of law plagues many democracies, and it's not necessarily...
it's not an either-or situation.
Yeah, exactly. So that's, but that's, again, there's a precursor for you. And wouldn't it be nice if we were focusing more on rule of law? I think one of the interesting things, now that we're talking sort of macro, is there seem to be competing views of how to participate in the region. You've got the State Department approach, which is the Middle East Partnership Initiative, talking about all of these things, economic development, pluralism, tolerance, building civic networks. And we've got a Pentagon that's really insistent upon transformation through violent means. And I think it's a schizophrenic approach. And that's one of the interesting things that we'll be watching over the next 4 years, certainly, is will the Middle East Partnership Initiative views begin to take hold as we think they should?
Well, Grant, we've used up all our time. I can't believe how fast it happened. We'll have you back again sooner rather than later. Okay?
Excellent, Todd. Appreciate
Grant Smith.
It, and thanks for the opportunity to chat again.
All righty. Learn more about him, irmep.org. Todd Feinberg Show signing off for today. I'll see some of you tomorrow, the rest of you next week.